We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. Harriet Williamson is the producer. Jason Croft is at the controls for this morning. Kyle Mabry was on hour number one. In this hour, we have a health topic for you. We'll be talking about pain and management of pain, something that for physicians and people in healthcare has been a great challenge for some time now. Certainly, we know that there are millions of Americans who experience chronic pain, and it can be something that can be very difficult to treat. Back pain or neck pain, for example, and these are common, very common complaints, sources of pain, at least when people say, where does it hurt? They talk about their back or their neck. This kind of pain can have many different causes, and I'm sure that physicians would argue that really effective treatment has to go beyond just treating the symptoms to discover, well, what are the underlying causes? Can we get at that? And in this part of the show, we'll be talking about a field that I think people will be hearing more about. Certainly, this was something that was new to me, although it's not really new, and that is something called interventional pain medicine. Many people across the country are doing it, and it has this as its basic idea. That is, as I said, you just can't treat symptoms. What you need to do is try to find out what is the cause of the pain, and then by using some minimally invasive procedures, you can really help people feel better and do that short of surgery. And we're talking this morning with a physician who works in this particular area here in our community. Our guest is Dr. Hyun-Chul Jung. He is an interventional pain specialist. And he is also head of the Department of Interventional Pain Medicine at Carl Hospital. He is, in addition to that, a clinical assistant professor in the University of Illinois College of Medicine here in Urbana-Champaign. We're pleased that he could spend some time here talking with us this morning. Questions are certainly welcome. We encourage people to call in with questions. Whenever we have a physician here on the program, I do always say the same thing right at the beginning to try to remind people that we cannot do diagnosis over the telephone. There are limits as to what we can do in this format. But we do programs like this to add to your knowledge, give you a chance to ask basic questions. So certainly questions are welcome. And as I always say, I think our guest here will do his best to answer whatever questions you have. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Also, you can email questions if you like to will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Nice to meet you.
Appreciate it. This is something I have to confess was interventional pain medicine was something that language and this approach to pain was something that was really new to me. This is the first that I am learning about it. It has been around for a while, this approach?
Yes, the interventional pain medicine is a specialty which has been established for quite a long time, but it's getting more and more involving and evolving. So, a lot of people doesn't know what this interventional pain medicine is doing. And then I'm glad that we have an opportunity to talk to your audience about what is this interventional pain medicine can do to the patient.
Yeah. For a long time, perhaps people, if they had serious pain issues, they would go to their physicians. Maybe they would go to a general physician or a family practice doctor. And that person would try to do some assessment. They might provide them with some kind of medication to help with pain. Perhaps they might send them to somebody else for some kind of procedure. What seems to be pretty strong here and involved in this approach is that it's what you're really trying to do is get a much better understanding of the patient, of their history, of what's going on with them, and then rather than simply writing a prescription for a pain medication, which you actually might do, but rather than just doing that, what you're trying to do is find out what really is the cause of the pain?
Well, the most important thing in the dealing with the back pain and neck pain nowadays is we really have to know what is causing that pain. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, the patient and then some of the physicians are assuming that it's coming from only spine, and then they're just treating that with some anti-inflammatory medication such as, you know, Motrin, Advil type of medication and physical therapy, and which is not resolving the issue, then oftentimes the patient can be considered for surgery right away. But surgery could be option for a patient who has a problem with, you know, some neck pain and back pain patient. But very, very important thing is we have to know what is actually causing the pain of the back pain and neck pain. For example, the hip area pain can come from spine itself, and then some it can come from spinal stenosis, which is the narrowing of the spinal cord pathway. And it can come from sacroiliac joint, which is a joint between the vertebra and our pelvic bone. It could come from our hip joint. And it could coming from the facet joint, which is a joint between the vertebrae. So knowing what is actually causing pain is has a totally different treatment options available. So that's a very important thing to establish from beginning.
Yeah. Well, that I guess that raises the question, say, you have someone who comes in and they say their hip, they're having hip pain. And now, I would not immediately assume that the cause might actually be not in my hip, but could be somewhere else. And you've listed now several possible causes. So you have someone who comes in and complains of that pain. How do you go about trying to find out where the cause is?
That's a good question. When the patient has some ongoing pain problem, and then they probably do a lot of imaging tests such as MRI, CT scan, X-ray, the EMG, nerve conduction test, all those things will give us a list of the problem patient has, but that doesn't automatically mean one of the pathology is causing pain. So that's why we have to evaluate the patient considering trauma mechanism, if there is any trauma involved, and then as the age and then their history, all these things and physical exam. And then we have to go over what is most likely cause of the pain, and then we have to either do some diagnostic procedure or we can do some therapeutic and diagnostic procedure to figure out what is causing this pain. So to speak, we have to go one by one by using our educated guess, so to speak, what is most likely causing it, because there is no other way to figure out. There is no other test which should tell us what pathology is causing patients' pain.
Mm. I think this is really fascinating to me because I guess the idea is that you could identify a particular nerve that was causing the problem, or it could be something else that's impinging on the nerves that run through the spinal column, or you could actually pinpoint one particular place, and then go from there with your treatment, either doing something to put a precise amount of pain medicine there, or some steroid medication, or something like that. Once you know where it is, go very precisely to that spot, and then whatever your treatment is, do it just right there.
Well, not only this, the procedure we are doing try to achieve our diagnosis itself, but if the patient needs the surgery, when we differentiate what level of the vertebral nerve, like we call the nerve root, is causing this patient's symptom, is will be helpful for the surgeon. They can operate it on the nerve. Usually the patient has a spine disc problem. They have more than one level. So we have to know what particular level surgeon has to go in. So oftentimes we're having a lot of refer from surgeon's office to ask us to figure out what level is causing pain. So we go by particular nerve by we call the surgery selective nerve root block, and then we are blocking the particular nerve to see whether that turning off that nerve helped the patient or not. So we can isolating actual level of the pain coming from.
Hmm. That I think is really interesting. The idea that you might suspect that the problem was in a particular place, So that what you can do then is selectively anesthetize, selectively deaden a particular nerve.
Yes.
And then you ask, you actually ask the patient, so does it still hurt? And if you find that by deadening a particular nerve, the pain goes away, then you know, well, that's what the problem is.
Yes.
How many can you narrow it down to a small number of nerves? I mean, how many different places do you have to check before you find out what is that it?
The first of all, we have to know this patient pain is coming from disc problem, which is a disc is bulging out, touching the nerve root, or this patient coming from pain is coming from joint or coming from muscular. That is the first thing we do. And then second thing, if it's coming from disc, then we can do some therapeutic injections and procedure to see how they respond. And then if we really have to figure out particular level to considering surgery or any other procedure further, then we can select usually two levels. Either this level or that level, we do a selective nerve block, and then we can find out what is more likely causing the patient pain. So by that, the surgeon can minimize kind of the surgery, which is just going to help the patient. Because, you know, in the past, before this specialty developed, so to speak, they just cover whole sector of the spine with a bigger surgery. But nowadays, surgeons are very precise, and then we're helping them out for that aspect as well.
So it may well be that people could go through this diagnostic process and might still end up having to have surgery.
Our specialty doctors or physicians who has been, you know, after their residency fellowship trained in interventional procedures, we're trained to recognize what is a surgical kind of indication and when we have to send the patient to surgeon. So our role here is that before, in spine in general, before surgery, we can differentiate what is causing the pain. And then if we see any indication of surgery or a patient is not responding to intervention, we can send this patient to surgeon. And then usually after surgery, if the patient is doing better, then that's good. But if it's not, then the patient usually coming back to us to control other way to control patient symptom. And we have many different way from medication management to all the way to spinal cord stimulator and all this very aggressive treatment plan for that as well. So our role is pretty much before and after surgery. So we oftentimes send the patient to surgeon whenever we see the surgical indication.
Our guest, let me just introduce again, our guest for this hour, Dr. Hyun-Chul Jung. He is an interventional pain specialist, teaches at the U of I Med School here in Urbana-Champaign. He's a clinical assistant professor. He's also department head of the Interventional Pain Center at Carl Hospital. And we're talking about here an approach to dealing with pain that is not exactly new, but it may be new to you hearing about this, that aims at trying to go really beyond just symptom control to trying to get a better understanding of the causes of pain and then the treatment. So questions are welcome, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. Also, emails possible, too, if you'd like to send something along that way. It is will-talk@illinois.edu. We do have a caller here, someone to bring into our conversation in Belgium, line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Good morning.
I've got a question about this situation in a strange sort of way, and it's not exactly precisely on what you were talking about. Maybe it is. And I know everybody's pain is subjective. Like, if we took and looked at Mr. Inge, in his daily job, I don't imagine he is subjected to a lot of pain. But if you look
only at psychological pain.
Okay. But a prize fighter, on the other hand, every time he does his job, he feels a lot of pain. So everybody's pain level is different. Now, the question I have for you is this. If I have a pain, when do I determine that pain is something that I should be concerned about? Or is it just those growing old pains and stuff like that?
Well, that's a good question. And then I don't think there's any definite answer for that, like when is the right time to you have to look for the physician for the pain, because everybody has the different pain threshold, and then everybody's the definition of pain is different. In general, pain is a perception. So, in a sense, if the patient suffering a lot of pain more than a certain amount of time, then that patient can talk to any physicians about it. There's nothing wrong with it. But, I mean, to evaluate the pain, we have to know, is there any associated symptom? Is there – what make the pain worse? For example, like a back pain patient, this pain is worse while you're walking and standing or sitting, or when you lie down, that the pain goes away. All these symptoms, if the patient is suffering some of the headache, what make your headache is worse? If the patient has a shoulder pain, what movement is making the pain worse? So if the patient has a pain which is associated with particular activity and a particular movement, that is more likely it is coming from a problem of either joint or spine or any of the other structures. If the patient is having pain no matter what, it's all the time, that also has to be addressed, but it's more likely that it's coming from more different than particular anatomical problem. So I don't know. My answer is helping you, but so if the patient is suffering this pain for a while, and it's affecting their daily activity, and then affecting their activity they want to do, that's the right time to talk to any time to talk to a primary care physician first, and then if they think there is some more thing has to be done, then they can refer the patient to the specialist to figure out.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So it does come down to, in part, it's a self definition, and the question is, well, do I see the doctor? The question is, well, is this pain interfering with your life?
Yeah.
Are you not able to do the things that you would really want to do because you're hurt? Well, and if you get to that point, then maybe at least you want to talk to somebody.
Yes, that's
about
better
it.
Than just keep trying to endure it and then taking pain pills by themselves and, you know, the self-diagnosis. And that is actually making later on, it's more difficult.
Yeah. Well, you touch on something that I think is also worth mentioning, too, that I think that I mentioned that what you're doing here is if you do something that's invasive, it's minimally invasive. It's like some kind of an injection, I think, basically. And that there are some within your approach, there are some things that you do that aren't invasive at all, in the sense that maybe one component of this is, as you say, trying to talk to people about the pain, but also when do you have this pain? What are you doing when you have this pain? You know, and then is it possible that by looking at people's body mechanics, you know, what their daily activities are, what they're doing, that you can actually, by using something like physical therapy, you can actually do an intervention that way that's not invasive at all?
Well, that's a great question. And then my opinion is any really truly important pain intervention or pain center usually running the multidisciplinary kind of a model, comprehensive mm-hmm. model, which has not only interventions, but also we have to look at the patient body mechanics as well. So, for example, our program, we're sending patient to our specialized the therapist to figure out their home exercise regimen and then back strengthening exercise afterward of the procedure or even before, depends on the situation. So I always spend some time to talk to patient. Body mechanics is more important than anything, because if the patient is get better with this procedure and then doing same thing same way all the time, and then pretty much guarantee patient going to come back to me. So I'm trying to address that issue and explaining and then showing the some spine model and then all these things. Some of the patient has a willingness to do that and then get better, but some of the patient honestly not very cooperative on that aspect, and they're keep on doing their wrong things, and then that makes treatment is very difficult.
Yeah, well, it's difficult. Once you get in the habit of doing something a certain way, breaking the habit is just really
very difficult. I understand that.
Let's see, we have someone in Edgar County here to talk with on our line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding back and arthritic combination. I have a mild compression at T12 and a mild disc bulge at L3-4, L4-5, you know, such. I had an MRI scan of the lumbar about 4 years ago. And at that time, the prescription that was made was that I would have cortisone injections.
Okay.
And I did have cortisone injection, and according to what I was told by the doctor and also by the physician who did the injection, was that, you know, I would have relief for 6 months.
Okay. You
know, it lasted 10 days.
Okay.
Then I was, I went back, and I was not too happy. And she said, well, we could put it on a monthly basis. And I said, I don't think so, because of the side effects of cortisone. I've had members of my family and friends of the family who I've known over the years who have had cortisone, and they have not had very good side effects regarding it. And so I'm wondering, what is your thinking? Because I do have, you know, the continuous pain, and I also have the arthritic situation, which, like today with this weather, you know, I feel like a barometer. And also I have the added thing where you have therapy that I have atrial fibrillation. So,
well, you brought up very good discussion here. Of course, I cannot give particular diagnosis and therapy
but I'm
plan.
Wanting to know
yes.
your consideration
yes.
of cortisone.
Yes, but actually, I really think you brought up a very good question. I really want to touch base with this question. First of all, I agree with you more than your physician. every month, cortisone. We not actually now modern intervention or specialist is not using cortisone. We are using some steroid, a different type of steroid, depends on the physician. But having that injection every month is absolutely, I don't agree with that. And then you have a legitimate concern about steroid side effect, and that is a correct concern. And then I don't agree with that.
It does have side effects of possible diabetes, doesn't it?
Though actually, the steroid can, you know, bring your sugar up temporarily, but if you have diabetes, then your sugar will be swing more.
Okay.
But the here is a very important thing here. You have arthritis in the back and then multi-level disc bulging and then also compression fracture. So as we discussed at the very early time in this program, you have to get to somebody who can differentiate what is causing actually your pain first. If your disc bulging is causing the pain, then what level is likely? And if you're causing your pain has been caused by your facet, the arthritis in the back, that treatment direction is a little bit different than just steroid injection to your epidural space. So, and then also if the compression fracture is causing your pain, there's different procedure such as a vertebroplasty is available, and then that is the different direction as well.
Now, what is that?
That particular procedure, we cannot cover it whole lot, but it's basically injecting some bone cement into the fracture the vertebra, and then can help. But that is not automatically you will help. You know, you will be helped by that because they have to find out where the pain is coming from first. So my advice to you is that maybe you can talk your primary care physician to send you some of a more comprehensive intervention or pain center. Then they can take a look at you, and then they can figure out what is actually causing problem. If it's coming from the disc bulging and then you're responding to injection but it's not lasting long enough, you might be candidate for surgery.
No, so, I thought for the period of time that it lasted that any other opportunity of more frequent was beyond belief, in my opinion. And I ceased attending that physician because I just told her, I said, I don't agree with you in any way.
Well, we have also a lot of patients, we can do the injection and procedures and help very short time. And that the fact patient is getting only short-time help is also that is information we can utilize that as achieving your treatment plan. So I think is your best bet here is the being referred to some of the comprehensive intervention or pain center, which is not the another problem here nowadays, not only here in your case, but nationwide now the back pain and neck pain's problem is they're send the patient to some of the physician who can do only epidural injection and then nothing else. So they got this injection over and over, and then they were just spending time, and then actually the patient problem was coming from something else. So it's important. I cannot make this more clear. It's very important you get into some of the physician who can utilize all possible interventions to differentiate your pain source. That is more important than anything else at this point.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Well, and having said all that, how long should you expect, if you're indeed going to do a steroid injection, how long would you expect that the benefits to last?
Epidural steroid injection or any other joint steroid injection utilizing steroid. First of all, before I answer that question, the reason we're using steroids are one of the best anti-inflammatory medication, which is strongest one. By doing the injection, we try to deliver that medication to the problem area without causing that much of systemic absorption. Right. If I give a mega dose to the patient through the mouth, it will get there some, but not enough. And I always joke to my patient, one way to catch the spider is to burn your whole house, but nobody will do that. So the way we're doing injecting is delivering anti-inflammatory. Well, how long it should, there is no should there. Okay. It varies from one day to even a couple of years. So another way to answer that question is as long as we can maintain patient pain under control with some procedure every 4 or 6 months, that is doable. But that's also age. The patient depends on patient age. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't accept that as an acceptable treatment for 25 years or young patient. So that is very difficult to cut as a one thing, but has to consider all possible factors for a patient as well.
Mm-hmm. We're talking this morning in this hour of Focus about interventional pain medicine, and our guest for the show is Dr. Hyun-Chul Chung. He is an interventional pain specialist at Carl, and we'll talk some more in just a moment. First, however, we need to take a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of American healthcare as seen from the perspective of a doctor at an inner-city Chicago public hospital. We talk with Dr. David Ansel about his new memoir, County, Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's Public Hospital. Also, Michael Barson talks about his anthology of romance comics, Agonizing Love. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here with different topics all throughout the week. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be looking for your comments on the programs we air on our stations. We'll be doing a show that we call Talk to the Managers. We occasionally do this with our guests, Mark Leonard, who is our general manager for Illinois Public Media, and Jay Pierce, who's director of created content. So whatever's on your mind about the programs you hear, you can call in and talk to these guys. They're the guys that make the decisions about what we put on the air. Also tomorrow, we'll talk about what's happening with handwriting. Just recently, there have been a number of stories indicating that young people can't read cursive writing and don't do it themselves. And it is no doubt the result that we're doing so many things nowadays with keyboards. We'll talk a little bit about this with Kitty Burns Flory. She's a writer. She's written a book that's titled Script and Scribble, The Rise and Fall of Handwriting. That's tomorrow at 11. And then one more Friday morning, 10 o'clock, our monthly show on personal finance. This time around, Kevin Waspy will be our guest. He's a lecturer in finance at the U of I in the College of Business. You can find out what we're doing or listen to past programs by going to our website, will.illinois.edu. In this hour, our guest is Dr. Hyun-Chul Chung. He is an interventional pain specialist at Carl, where he heads up their department of pain intervention, interventional pain medicine. He's also clinical assistant professor in the College of Medicine here at the U of I. And we're talking about this area of practice, this approach to pain that is called interventional pain medicine. And as I said at the beginning of the program, this was new to me. This terminology is new to me. It may be new to people who are listening. It's an approach of goes to trying to find out what causes the pain and then go from there in terms of treatment. And we're kind of focusing on back and neck pain simply because that if you look at where it is people say it hurts, that's the most common.
Pretty much 90%
of patients.
Pretty much
the most common. People who call it, if it's pain, that's the problem. And then I think it's really interesting, though, too, that neck, something happening in the neck or the back can be reflected in pain other places. A little earlier, we talked about, well, you could have hip pain that was connected to that. Also, headaches. Some people who have headaches, you find out really what's going on. It's in their, maybe mostly in the neck.
Well, the usually headache has been handled by a neurologist, which is a little bit different the department than I am in. But some of the headache is caused by the cervicogenic headache, which means your headache is coming from your neck. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if the patient has neck facet arthritis, meaning facet means your joint between your vertebrae and your neck, causing significant headache. So usually the way we handle that is that the neurologist treating headache and then they're suspecting this headache, patient's headache is maybe coming from the neck, then they send the patient to us and we take a look at it, and then we do some diagnostic nerve blocks and then to see whether they can help the patient or not. We can achieve some diagnosis as well, and then we can treat with some other modalities. Mm.
Well, we have another caller here. We'll talk with them. This is someone who is in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Yep.
Hi.
In terms of one of the approaches, you said a multi-approach to this thing in terms of pain. Do you actually use acupuncture?
Well, in our center, not by myself, but we have our staff, a physician who's doing acupuncture. And then to answer your question, I believe acupuncture, but it's not for everything. It's a particular treatment tool for some of the particular the problems. And then to answer your question, yes, acupuncture is available at my center. And then I think there's a couple of acupuncturists available in the Champaign area as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Again, other questions are welcome. Just pick up the telephone, give us a call, 333-9455, a toll-free 800-222-9455. A little bit earlier, you talked about using a temporary nerve block as a diagnostic tool, so that if you have, to say it just as really simply, because that's the way I understand it, you know, if you have a suspicion that a particular nerve is the problem, you can temporarily deaden that nerve. And if the pain goes away, well, you know that that's the problem. This is something that also that you do use, though, as a treatment. There are some cases in which you can actually deaden a nerve, or is that really not, am I not quite describing that in the correct way?
Yes, the answer is yes and no, because some of the problem, for example, like the disc problem, the nerve we're kind of blocking nerve is main nerve, which is a sensory and motor nerve to the leg and the back. Okay. We're not going to kill that nerve. If that's the problem, then we can try to address that the problem with the adding some of the steroid, which is there, we try to calm down that nerve. If you have a disc bulging will be there, but by calming down this nerve, which is by inflamed, by irritation from the disc, and then symptom can be improved, and the patient can go to some therapeutic exercise after, and then we can maintain the right alignment, and those things are going to help the patient long term. However, if the patient pain is coming from the facet joint, which is the joint between vertebrae, that since we cannot replace the joint, and then and then surgery will not help that problem. What we do is after we achieve diagnostic value, such as we try to block the small nerve goes into that joint, which does not have any other function than sensing the pain from the joint. Mm-hmm. and then we do one or two times or sometimes three times, depends on how sure we are, then we can use radio frequency energy, same as a cardiac interventionalist using for the heart. We are using same type of energy, radio frequency energy, and we can ablate that nerve, so to speak, kill that nerve. Mm. And then since we can do that, because since this nerve does not have any other function than sensing pain from the joint, we can do that without any causing any problems. So the only difference will patient will feel is their pain is better. So, yes, we do sometimes kill the nerve, but not all the time.
Okay. To another caller here, someone in Savoy. This is line two.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Can you make some tiny discussion of missing limb or body part pains, which I suspect occur after the problem has disappeared, you know, by loss of a hand or a foot. And with organ transplants, is there pain associated, and how is that handled?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, a missing body part, yes, that is actually we call the phantom pain. And then sometimes, you know, usually when the patient has amputation or something like that, they pretty much a majority of patients will experience some type of phantom pain, which is filling the pain with the body part. Which
it's
is
not there
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, not there anymore. Mm-hmm. But the usually... a lot of patients slowly recover from that, and then the phantom pain goes away. But some patients who are stuck with the phantom pain, we usually treat those patients with medication management, not necessary pain medication. There is a that phantom pain is coming from the nerve itself, the nerve being cut. So we try to address that issue with some of the multiple nerve modulating medication, meaning instead of just blocking the pain, this medication goes and try to calm down the nerve. That is there is lines of medication we can try. And then some of the patient, we have to put them on our chronic opioid medication management because there is no other option. Knowing textbook saying that phantom pain is not being very well helped by the pain medication, but sometimes, you know, that's the case. But majority of the treatment is that, and then so the phantom pain is sometimes a very challenging problem.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, I hope that answers the questions. Question of the caller, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And if people would like to send an email, you can certainly do that. And that is will-talk@illinois.edu. In fact, I have an email here from someone who writes in that he says he has nearly constant pain in his back, neck, and hips. He's had x-rays and MRIs, but all they tell me is that I have degenerative disc disease. I'm 59. Everyone I know that age tells me they have the same diagnosis. The only relief I can get is by taking Advil during the day and Vicodin at night so I can sleep. My doctor says he doesn't like to prescribe narcotics. He says, I resent this reluctance to prescribe something that helps me. He can't seem to fix me, so the least he can do is give me some relief. I have had physical therapy, which didn't help. I tried chiropractics, and that didn't help. And he is looking for some advice on how he might proceed next.
I feel like I'm getting very much a very everyday history from patient. Yeah, that's a... I think that is a great question. I think it's first of all, the neck, back, and hip is a very common problem of the pain. And mm-hmm. then the degenerative disc disease, everybody who's getting aged, now we call more matured, patient gonna get. Regardless. But the problem here is degenerative joint disease, degenerative disc disease, not always causing pain, you know, by itself. When you have to really treat the pain whenever it really causes a problem. In this particular patient, I would like advice to talk to your primary care physician, refer you to some of the intervention or pain center to work with them to try to achieve, is there any particular treatment available? For example, back pain, your back pain could be the degenerative joint and disc disease, and then any injections or any nerve blocks might help you. And then there is no, I want to just make one thing clear. there is no such a thing cure this degenerative disease because mm-hmm. that's part of our aging process. So I always challenging my patient who's asking me to cure them, and then I just asked, have you ever met any doctor who can cure hyper pressure problem? Or have you ever, you know, met any doctor who can cure diabetic, you know, problem? But they're managing it, and then people leaves okay with that. So the degenerative disc disease and then chronic pain problem is the same way. We have to manage it, and we have to treat the more likely cause. But in a sense that there is no cure for it, but we can manage it. So I strongly advise the treatment that this patient has been through is a very typical conventional treatment. I think this is a time to go next step, which probably you better talk to some of your area's interventional specialists who really truly do comprehensive things, not only one particular injection. Then they can work with one area first. If you have a more back pain, then they can look at the back, and then they can look at the neck as the next step. That's what I would like advice.
All right. Well, again, hope that helps. Other questions, welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. And our guest in this hour is Dr. Hyun-Chul Jung. He's an interventional pain specialist at Carl. That's what we're talking about here, dealing with pain. Questions are welcome. Maybe you could talk for a little bit about the role of medication here, because certainly we know that now there are some very powerful pain medications available by prescription that for some people can be very helpful. It can make the difference between being able to live your life and not. Associated with them, we also know there is great potential for abuse of these medications. And one of the things that we're told now is that abuse of prescription medications is a real problem, and the pain relievers, you know, that is really a big problem. How do you think about how it is these medicines should be used, and at what point you start thinking about making them part of the treatment package?
Well, the medication management is definitely one of the treatment tool, without any doubt. But the problem ongoing is our society is prescribing this opioid medication without too much of, care. So, mm-hmm. so to speak, number one prescribed medication and pain medication, probably known by as Vicodin, which is hydrocodone and then acetaminophen mixture. The problem here is that medication designed for temporary use, such as post-op care and mm-hmm. then the short-term use. But somehow this medication has been utilized like a long time, more than years and years. And then the problem here is that medication has acetaminophen in it. And then that is actually, if you take too much, it's pretty much harmful for your liver.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, right way is, as I say, first of all, from the beginning, that's why we really want to involve it earlier than the later. Try to minimize usage of the pain medication, utilizing other modalities, interventions. If everything fails or if the patient need to be on some pain medication, there is a couple of layers of the medication we go over. And then we started with some of the temporary medication, and then we realized if the patient has no other way to control pain other than the pain medication, then we usually put the patient on around-the-clock opioid medication. Because a lot of patients thinking, okay, some of the strong opioid medication is worse than Vicodin, but actually that is not true. Mm-hmm. Being on the Vicodin for a long time could be worse than the actually strong pain medication. So I think it's your pain has to be controlled by only pain medication management, you better be on the legitimate chronic opioid medication management by appropriate pain mm-hmm. physician.
Well, and I have heard or read from time to time people saying that they think that maybe sometimes physicians are reluctant to prescribe these drugs because of the problems that are associated, but that there are certain individuals that seem to be able to take them, have relief from their pain, and to function just fine. That is, they don't have any negative side effects. They can work, they can drive a car, they can do whatever they need to do. They get pain relief, and it's not a problem. Do you think that there are some doctors that are just too they're worried about the drugs and they're reluctant to prescribe them even when it seems like it would be an appropriate thing.
Well, I truly understand both sides because, mm-hmm. you know, doctor has enough patient who's having addiction problem and then drug abusing problem. So they have a reason the being reluctant to prescribe medication. And then it's even for us, it's very difficult to differentiate who's really need the medication, who's really drug seeking. But however, in general, pain medication is some of the medication you really have to have a right indication. And then when you take it, you have to take the right pain medication, not just any pain medication. And then, as you say, the patient might function very well with a certain amount of pain medication at this point, but you have to look for long term, not just at that moment. You know, same as our body developing tolerance for pain medication. So somebody who will be good for, you know, the function and everything with the 2 or 3 tablets of medication per day, but the year later, that patient needs 7, 8, which is not good. Mm-hmm. So that's why you need this look at the whole long term and then has to control those pain medication management from the beginning with.
Yeah. We talked a little bit earlier about some of the things that you're able to do. Again, this goes back to the idea that, you know, say that you're talking about back pain, that if you can really identify the cause, then what you can do is you can do your treatment and you can really target it so that if, for example, you're giving somebody a steroid injection rather than giving them some oral steroids that circulate through their whole body, you say, well, I only need to go it right here, so let's put it right there. So that's one thing you can do. You can also, in some cases, do selective blocking of nerves so that they just don't transmit the pain anymore. There are some other things that are also... They're invasive, but they're sort of minimally invasive in terms of going in there and doing things that will affect people's pain. What are some of the besides those two things that we've talked about? What are some of the other things that you do?
We pretty much our center. We are doing a whole spectrum of the interventions from very minimally invasive to very invasive. Mm-hmm. Some of the patient might be benefit from the nerve block, which is under our RIP. Such as patient who has the shingles and we call the post-herpetic neuralgia. Some of the patient who suffer the shingle ends up with the pain lasting forever. So those mm-hmm. patient can be benefit from those intercostal nerve block. And some of the patient pain is coming from joint, and we can do some of the joint block as well. And also we can be as invasive as we can put some spinal cord stimulator, which is typically pacemaker type of device going under skin to spine area to blocking pain. For example, if the patient had the multiple back surgery and nothing is helping the patient, so then we do the trial of this, putting this spinal cord stimulator lead and then hook up with the outside device and to see whether that helps or not. If it's help, then we do implantation of those device and which can help the patient. And also we can do some such as a discography, which is diagnostic procedure. We put the needle into the disc and try to pressurize disc and try to find out what's going on inside of disc. And there is many other treatment interventions. I cannot mention all of them, but depends on your symptoms. So we're treating our main patients are spine-related patients, but we're treating other pain problem as well.
We have another caller here. This is someone who is in Savoy, and they're on line number 1. Hello.
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 Yes. Yes. My husband has Parkinson's disease, and he gets cramping in his legs because of the medications he's on and just to do with the Parkinson's. And he takes ibuprofen hand over fist every day, and I keep warning him that this is dangerous for his stomach, and that it's, and maybe I'm wrong, that it's not relieving his pain because the pain isn't caused by a normal muscle spasm, that it's related to his illness. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that.
Well, ibuprofen is a good medication if you use a certain amount and limited time, but the main problem is ibuprofen can cause not only stomach problem, it can cause kidney problem as well. So if you're on ibuprofen beyond the recommended dosage for too long time, it can actually harm your stomach as well as your kidney. So definitely that is not right way to go. And then I think you your husband has to talk back to your primary care physician, discuss some options, other options. But to answer your question, ibuprofen, taking a lot of ibuprofen per day for a long time is definitely not recommended.
Okay, and that's what he's been doing. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think that's a good just generally to remind people that the occasional use of over-the-counter pain medicines are okay. But that with all of these things, with acetaminophen, which is, people think of it as Tylenol, and that's what that is, too much of that particularly can be very damaging to the kidneys.
No, liver.
Pardon me, to the liver. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something that you need to watch
that
out
is,
for.
That is one of the top leading causes of our country's liver transplantation.
Really? That's really remarkable. Yeah. And there, I think it's particularly, I think we try to warn people about it when it comes to cough and cold season because it's in a lot of medications. And you also want to make sure people say, don't take this thing, read what's on the label, don't take that, and take more Tylenol too, because it can get to be a real problem.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think Tylenol is okay to take medication. It's a very safe medication if you follow the direction and the short time. But the problem is the Tylenol built in the hydrocodone, Vicodin, or Norco. They're taking that tons of that for a long time is causing problem.
Yeah, and with the other thing with the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, then you get into, particularly a lot of people have trouble with gastric bleeding and other. So, but there are other problems that are associated with those kind of things.
Yeah,
kidney problem. Okay, so again, it's probably just if you feel the need of taking that much pain medicine, it would be a good idea for you to talk about this with your doctor and see what's going on.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Well, any last thing that you might like to leave with folks before we finish up?
Well, I think it's that if you have a certain amount of pain, especially neck and back pain, for a long time, and it's interfering your pain daily activity and anything you want to do, it's probably the right time to ask your primary doctor to send you to some of your area, the true comprehensive interventional center to figure out what is causing your pain, and then they might guide you a totally surprising way because, a lot of pain can come from different ways. So I would like to definitely advise that too.
All right. Our guest in this hour, Dr. Hyun-Chul Jung. He is an interventional pain specialist. In fact, he is the head of the Carl Interventional Pain Center. He's also a clinical assistant professor in the U of I College of Medicine here in Urbana-Champaign. Thank you very much.
Thank you.